Chapter 40.
After a long moment of silence, Stephen says, "Do you have some identification?" From a small beaded purse that hangs over her shoulder, the visitor takes out a wallet. From the wallet, she pulls a driver's license. It confirms that her name is Tanya Marie Baptiste. She's 29 years old and lives in Winnipeg. She's an organ donor.
"Your First Nation," Vernon says.
"Beaver Lake Cree."
"How do you know my brother?" Belle asks.
"He came to us with important information."
"Us?"
"The group I work with. A loose connection of like-minded people, all First Nation."
"Got a name for these like-minded people?" Stephen asks.
"Earth Children United."
"Never heard of you."
"Not surprising. We tried to stay below the radar. The government is always prying at the edges of indigenous organizations. They see insurrection everywhere."
"But this isn't about insurrection?" Belle asks.
Tanya shakes her head.
"It's about a grand scheme that will wreak havoc on the environment of Canada."
"What kind of scheme?"
"To tap the largest reservoir of natural gas in North America and ruin the Arctic in the process."
"Whoa," Stephen says.
"I think we need to sit down,"
Minnie suggests.
They move back into the kitchen where the map with black lines is still open on the table.
Tanya eyes it and says with a deep of sadness,
"That map was drawn by a dead man."
She sees the looks of horror on their faces and quickly adds,
"Not Lou."
"Sit,"
Vernon says.
It's more an order than an invitation, and Tanya takes a seat. The others return to their chairs.
"Tell us about Katie," Belle says.
"And the dead man,"
Vernon adds.
Tanya studies the map.
"Do you know anything about Katie?"
"We had a break-in last night," Belle says, "and today we had a visit from a couple of men claiming to be from Canadian intelligence and security. When we mentioned Katie, their eyes lit up."
"And two men from Border Patrol paid us a visit this afternoon,"
Minnie says,
"but they claimed it was about smuggling."
"A lot of fingers in this pie," Tanya says, "and a lot of subterfuge."
"Who is Katie?" Belle asks.
"She doesn't exist,"
Tanya replies.
"Hard to believe."
Stephen turns the map over, showing her the scrawled "Kill Katie."
"What I mean is, that's not her real name. We thought she was one of us, but we know now she was an operative for the other side. Monty, the man who wrote that, meant it for Lou, probably as both information and a warning."
"You say you're working with my son,"
Vernon says.
It's clear he's not convinced.
"For a few months now."
"Doing what exactly?"
"Trying to stop this ecological disaster."
"Explain,"
Vernon says.
Tanya takes a deep breath before diving in.
"It's an agreement between governments, yours and ours, and some of the largest oil companies in North America. The vast gas reserves in the Canadian Arctic have been known about for years, but the issue of drilling has been surrounded by all kinds of controversy. We know now that deals have been struck behind closed doors involving lots of money under the table. Legislation has already been passed, clearing the way for drilling, transport, and processing."
"That kind of legislation over an issue as sensitive as this, wouldn't it have become public quickly?" Belle says.
"The way has been cleared quietly with riders on 100 different bills passed by our Parliament and your Congress. It's been a slow, carefully planned, insidious process to devastate the Arctic wilderness."
Stephen looks at her skeptically.
"And you know all this how?"
"Because of Lou. He can prove it. That's why it's important that I find him."
"When did you last hear from him?"
Vernon asks. "A week ago. A meeting had been set up at a cabin north of Winnipeg. Lou was going to give us documents exposing the scheme and all those involved.
Did Lou say what the documents were? Bell asks.
Memos of some kind. What we know is that he first stumbled onto something suspect while he was working with the Lac La Ronge Reserve,
helping them get back land lost in a shady deal in the 50s, Stephen says.
How did you know?
The two guys who paid us a visit today, maybe they really were from intelligence and security.
Or they were just doling out enough information to make it appear so, Bell says.
Anyway,
Tanya goes on,
what your brother initially found was a more recent easement agreement across the southern section of the reserve signed 10 years ago.
Agreement with whom?
Same people who stole the land in the 50s. The provincial government. This easement was described as a right-of-way for a road and adjunct construction. Although it wasn't clearly stated in the agreement, the understanding was that the adjunct construction was to be an extensive system of power lines to bring electricity to isolated communities, which apparently got your brother interested, because there were already lines serving all the communities on the reserve. He began checking and discovered similar agreements with a number of other reserves. It was done quietly, and just like earlier land thefts, with a lot of money passing under the table.
Bell puts a finger on the map.
So this is the blueprint for the pipeline network?
Roughly. Monty forced it out of one of the people on the other side of this issue.
Forced? Bell asks.
This business is deadly serious. Monty was one of the casualties.
He's the dead man you mentioned. How did he die?
That meeting north of Winnipeg? Katie set it up. But like I said, she turned out to be working for the other side. When Monty got to the meeting site, Katie was already there. But he smelled something funny about the situation. He called Lou and warned him off. Then he ran. But not before some goons put a couple of bullets in him. He lived long enough to let us know the true nature of Katie.
And to send me this map, Bell says.
Apparently.
Why me? Why not Lou?
Maybe he was afraid they'd get to Lou too, and he wanted to be sure the map reached someone who would do the right thing with it.
Lou is always talking about you, Bell. How proud he is that you're going to be a lawyer and defend indigenous rights.
Did Monty send anything else with the map?
Bell glances at Stephen, then says,
just the map with the cryptic message and the date May 10th.
What's so important about May 10th?
I don't think it's a date. Maybe something about longitude or latitude. I say that because of another important piece of the puzzle that we hoped Lou could provide.
Which is? Stephen asks.
The route for the primary pipeline from the Arctic to the processing facility, which we believe will be built somewhere in Alberta or Saskatchewan, central to all the pipelines you see here. Lou indicated to us that it was among the memos and other documents he had and was going to hand over to us.
Can't you just go public with what you do know, Stephen says,
and sound like crazy conspiracy theorists?
The public is already primed to dismiss cries of injustice coming from indigenous people. In order to get anyone who counts to listen to us, we need those documents. Ever since that botched meeting, we've been trying to reach Lou on his cell phone, but he doesn't answer. After Katie, he probably doesn't know who to trust.
It's clear these people are still worried about my brother, Bell says.
So they haven't got their hands on Lou or the documents.
Tanya looks uncomfortable and says,
it was a long drive here. Mind if I use your bathroom? Down the hallway,
Minnie replies.
Second door on your right.
When Tanya has gone, Stephen says quietly,
why didn't you tell her about the thumb drive, Bell?
How can we be sure anything she's saying is true?
For all we know, she could be lying to us. She could be Katie.
She's given us a pretty good idea of what's going on,
Minnie says.
But without the documents to prove it, Mom, all we have is a map full of lines.
What do you want to do?
Vernon says.
Take the direct approach, Belle replies.
When Tanya returns, Belle says, "You claim to be working with my brother. Can you prove it?"
Tanya picks up her beaded leather bag and pulls out the wallet that held her driver's license.
This time she extracts a photograph. It's a picture of her and Lou standing in front of a statue of Mahatma Gandhi.
"I've seen that statue in Winnipeg," Belle says.
"Read the back."
Belle turns it over. Written in script are the words, "Together toward peace."
"Do you recognize your brother's handwriting?"
Belle passes the photograph around. Minnie nods and says,
"Lou always writes with a flourish."
"Kind of convenient," Stephen says, "having that photo so handy."
"I thought I might need to prove myself. Seemed the easiest way."
Tanya slips the photo back into her wallet, which she returns to her beaded bag.
"Any other test you want me to pass? Look, we're worried about Lou's safety and why he's gone silent."
"Like you said, maybe he just doesn't know who to trust,"
Vernon offers.
"He trusts you, doesn't he? But has he called?"
"If these people know who he is and have the kind of reach you seem to believe they have, maybe he's afraid they'll track his calls,"
Stephen offers.
Tanya slumps a little in her chair.
"I should probably get back to Winnipeg. We don't have much time to stop this meeting. If it goes forward, trying anything after that will be like standing in front of a speeding freight train. So much pristine land will be ruined forever."
"It's late and a long drive,"
Minnie points out.
"Would you like to stay here for the night? Get an early start tomorrow. We have a spare bedroom. That is, if Stephen doesn't mind sleeping on the couch."
"I don't want to impose."
"I insist," Minnie says.
"Maybe things will look brighter in the morning."
Minnie prepares the spare bedroom, the one she says Lou and Anton shared growing up. They bid Tanya good night, and before they all turn in, they discuss the plan for the next day.
"Anton will be flown out of the woods with the others tomorrow,"
Vernon says.
"He'll want to go with us to Shoal Lake, I'm sure."
"If I know my dad, he'll want to be in on this too,"
Stephen says.
"So the question,"
Vernon says,
"is should we take Tanya?"
Belle considers and gives a nod.
"If Lou's there, he'll confirm her story or brand her as another liar. If she is who she says she is, she can get the information Lou has to the right people. It's clear that time is of the essence."
Vernon looks to Stephen. "You've got a vote in this."
"Belle's right. She should go with us."
"Okay, then,"
Vernon says.
"Let's all get some sleep."
Stephen has agreed to take the living room sofa. Belle brings him a blanket and lingers while her parents head to their room.
"Thank you,"
she says.
"What for? None of this is really your problem, but here you are."
"Wouldn't miss it for the world," he says.
"Seriously, I'm grateful. We're all grateful." She's near enough to him that when he looks into the dark wells of her eyes, he sees his own reflection.
"You're welcome."
She leans to him, her breath warm against his cheek, and plants a kiss there.
"Good night."
Not long after, Stephen drifts into sleep, with the feel of that gentle kiss still lingering.